The following is intended for bizarre audiences only. Welcome to the Midnight Library.
Mr. Darling, where have you been hiding?
Don't you play dumb with me, madam. Spy tattoo!
I am sorry. I can barely see you. It's more like little watercolor paintings, really.
Speaking of paintings, you're sure you want the guests to see the Hall of Sacred Paintings, including the new one of you, Ben Stefford, riding Shadowmare, bareback?
Oh. Drape that one, please, darling.
Yes, ma'am.
All right, try to calm down now. I know you're all very excited from the refreshing little tour of the new way Mr. Darling brought you through to the reading room this evening. Oh dear, some of you are still blushing. I won't apologize, I'm afraid, because I'm not embarrassed. The hallway of the beautiful artworks you've just had the privilege of viewing is only a percentage of the artworks that the entirety of the Midnight Library contains. And you may have noticed, I'm sure, that several of these paintings were draped for your protection, because the beings in them and the subject matter are too, sacred or, powerful, and can only be beheld by certain other beings. Many of the ladies in the paintings, whom you might have thought at first glance were me, were, of course, actually my grandmothers and sisters and aunts and associates with strong resemblances to me. Genetics is a funny thing, is it not? And for some reason, clothing was sometimes optional at their hayrides and bonfires and festival-type gatherings and the like, it seemed. Perhaps people in the past were just more free-spirited, close to nature, or comfortable in their own skin. Who knows? Will I take questions about them at the end of tonight's reading? I will take a few of your questions about our private collection, yes. What I can tell you, my dear guests, is that I do know that you cannot purchase any of these paintings or even view copies of them in any gallery in the world, even though they were painted by some of the most famous artists in the world. Whether they remember painting them or not is another matter, and another story for another time altogether. Let's just say that if you were anyone from Van Gogh to Vermeer, from Bosch to Bourgeois, and you were feeling out of sorts or at a loose end, and an attractive woman poured you a drink and suggested that you pack up your art supplies and get away from it all for a while, say with her and her friends, well, that's a weekend in which you're going to have a fabulous time, but one that you're probably not going to be able to recall much, if anything, about anything, ever. We're quite proud of our wickedly beautiful and unique art collection. Yes, Miss Price. Hmm? No, We do not offer any of our prints for sale either. Are you mad, my dear? We're taking a risk now with you telling the other townspeople what you've supposedly seen here tonight. We believe they'll assume you've been drinking. Oh, my stars, we are late. Please take your seats, everyone. I am your humble host, Miranda Merrick. Hospitality? No, there's nothing on the hospitality tray because, well, haven't you heard of starving artists? Now, there is one little announcement just before we begin. Where's that piece of paper? One small note. Dear Ms. Merrick, please inform your guests that at the reception desk, there's a little basket with three fingers in it that were snapped off as a precaution when someone attempted to lift a book from beyond the cordoned-off area. Thank you. Signed, Goon Number 12. So, if those are yours, that's where you can pick them up with the fingers you still have left. Please try to remember not to try to get to the books.
Naughty!
Our story tonight is one I have to admit I was surprised to learn that many of you have such a keen interest in. Witches in art. And for those of you who may not know, there's much more of the subject matter about than you first might expect. It turns out that witches are, in fact, welcome wanton beings in the hearts and minds of people all over the world. Take that, you goody-two-shoes, you purportedly perfect lily-white angels and harp-playing boring old do-gooders. Oh, sorry. I apologize. The truth is, whether artists meant to be helpful or not, and early on they most certainly did not, from the 1400s, artists began creating their own interpretations of what they thought witches looked like. They set them down in everything from woodcut-style block prints illustrations to extravagantly painted masterpieces featuring their versions of witches. And whether or not they portrayed them in deep trances or communing with the spirit of the earth itself, or supposedly worshipping some form of Satan, artists have left a treasure trove of wild and mysterious images that in many cases only the artists understood the true nature of what they were trying to convince or convey to others about witches. Honestly, you need only make the simplest inquiry on your own, hint hint, three little words, the title of this reading, Witches in Art. And I promise you will be instantly mesmerized by the images that will appear before your eyes. I could hold for you several, in my not-so-humble opinion, several riveting evenings of readings on this one topic alone. You may take my statement as either a threat or a promise. I don't actually care at all. The number of artworks is abundant and fulfilling to behold. And if you don't know anything about art, it's never too late to start. There's something for everyone. And witches, no matter what you may have heard, make a fine topic of research to begin with, if you're just starting to explore. So there. Once you've made your inquiry, dear guests, one of the first images that will come into view for you is that of the Magic Circle, a gorgeous and striking painting by artist John William Waterhouse, who loved to paint strong, magical women.
The magic circle was painted by Waterhouse in 1886. It is set in an arid landscape with warm brown rocky hills and high cliffs in the background, and a barren foreground. It features a solitary female, mid-stride before a brilliant brazen shallow kettle that stands burning over a risen fire of glowing orange coals. You swear you can see the sorceress move as she drags her outstretched scepter, scorching the earth, almost completing her spell in a perfect smoking circle. Her feet are bare. She wears a long, thin, pale, bluish gown that hugs her womanly figure. It is adorned with mighty Persian warriors. Around her slim waist, a sash of deep tan cloth holds fast a bouquet of herbs and poppies. She has tended to her raven hair in the style of the ladies of the early Anglo-Saxons, and it is held back with braids, but loose as the wind takes it. The artist has also equipped his masterful mistress. In her left hand, she firmly grasps a bolene, a golden crescent sickle representing her bond with the moon and the witch goddess Hecate, encircling her neck. Most befitting of the title of the painting, appears to be an Ouroboros, a live, glistening brown snake eating its own tail, one of the most revered symbols of the infinity cycle of life, death, and rebirth. This self-devouring snake is a powerful image from ancient Egypt. And just as the title suggests, hints of circles are politely given throughout the painting. The hem of the witch's gown is a semicircle. She resides inside of her circle, while her corvid companions remain on the outside of it. One is perched on a human skull, whose circular eye sockets stare blankly ahead at the witch's hypnotic motions as she parades around her purposeful fire. Even a wee-toed familiar of hers is restricted beyond the boundary of the witch's trench she has gouged into the dry ground with her fiery wand. Strange shapes and ghostly wisps rise in the pillar of smoke before the witch's face. She appears to be speaking her incantation as she walks. She is dramatic, self-assured, and confident in her magic, just as Waterhouse was in the painting of her. Waterhouse painted with an interest in depicting classic images of women from historic Greek and Roman times that were neither good nor evil, but simply going about practicing their powers of divinity. So you would see women as soothsayers, communing with gods and spirits, as oracles receiving messages from severed heads, and as witches commanding the elements all within his paintings. The Magic Circle was met with great critical acclaim during its very first exhibition in 1886, with reviews declaring it to be exotic, original, and enchanting. Speaking of enchanting, tonight's reading in the Midnight Library is brought to you by the League of Lady Gravediggers. The digging ladies have a new venture, but listen close to hear the clencher. They've gone and taken the Wilson Estate. It's a B&B, and man, it's great. Privacy is what the girls sell. They never see, and they never tell. Now is the time. Here's your chance. Book that weekend of dead romance.
12 guest rooms with private gates. Rise and shine or sleep in late. What you do in your room is up to you. Call for room service when you're through. Please be neat, don't wreck your room when you bring your partner to their doom. If you're regretting that you've married 'em, when they're gone, the ladies'll bury 'em. If you're recently hitched but a little unhappy, consider honeymooning, joining the League of Lady Gravediggers at the historic Wilson Estate. Have a bride to hide, a groom to doom? Big Lou says, you hitch 'em, we'll ditch 'em. Same great service, now with breakfast. Call 976-DITCH-WITCHES.
Our next painting is, in my opinion, a somewhat delightful scene in places, because of its bold statement, dear guests, although it does contain some terrible elements too. And it is Witch's Sabbath by Spanish artist Francisco Goya, painted in 1798, and was either commissioned by or purchased by the Duke and Duchess of Osuna, who were members of the Spanish nobility in the Age of Enlightenment, and very open-minded people for their time. Once you see this colorful and strange painting, you are highly unlikely to ever forget it. The Witch's Sabbath painting by Goya features Satan in the form of a huge, friendly-looking dark brown goat sitting bolt upright in the center of a sandy landscape with soft blue-gray mountains in the background. He is surrounded by perhaps less than a dozen women of varying ages that you are supposed to assume are witches. A few women, some young, some very old, in the bright, almost cheerful foreground, are presenting the grinning goat with babies. The goat, with large scrolling horns bedecked with oak leaves, is about to receive a plump pink child from a desperate-looking woman, while two bedraggled old witches in dark robes offer up a skeletal child in the lower right of the unusual painting. A troop of bats flit around over the heads of the bizarre scene. A bright crescent moon looms overhead in the starry navy blue sky as the cheeky, smiling goat receives the gift of children from the circle of adoring women. A group of nondescript women in the background seem to be awaiting their turn with the cartoonish goat. It is said that Goya painted witches in this painting and several others as a protest against what he believed to be the wrongful persecution of women for witchcraft. He thought society at the time was wasting its time with backward superstitious beliefs, while they should have been investing in education. That probably sounds very familiar. He was famous for using his art as criticism of the Spanish Inquisition and royalist government. Sadly, some still miss the point of his clever paintings even today, believing them to be actual representations of witches and Satan, as though these scenes actually happened. That's not possible, is it? Is it? My dear, dear guests, I debated whether or not to describe this next painting for you because of the delicate nature of the painting. But, well, you've just arrived through our wondrous hall of magical paintings. And, well, you've survived that relatively well. And you're all adults. in possession of adult minds and bodies, and, well, I'll be very careful and respectful and mindful of what I say and reveal. Suffice it to say, the next painting is one that contains a great deal of extraordinary amounts of human beauty and very little amounts of human clothing. I personally think it is lush, dreamy, and inviting. It is Louis Falero's Witches Going to Their Sabbath, and it is an aerial feast for hungry eyes. Falero's painting is considered to be a narrative painting because it tells a story. It is thought that Christianity and its Sabbath became the primary belief system in medieval Europe. So, somehow, it was only fair that the opposing stories about witches and their Sabbath also became very popular at that time. And Falero thought he would vivify his version of the witches in action for us to see. The entire scene takes place in flight in the skies. The background is rich in soft blue shades, and white clouds are all in motion as the tempest of nude witches and their weird crew rise on broomsticks, writhe in ecstasy, tumble and flee with their familiars to their appointment at a secret location hidden beyond our view. The central flying figures are grouped upon the back of a great gray goat. They are all light as feathers and happy. All of the flesh is so warm, supple, and beautiful. The middle witch, clutching the goat's horns with both hands, her eyes burn and stare straight at you. Even the very old witch in the front is captivating with her flowing purple robes and her black cat bracing itself upon her back. Off in the lower left corner floats a bearded, burly huntsman from stories of fanciful lore. One witch has seated herself upon his broad shoulder as another has caught him by the arm as she rises weightless upon her broom. Why, the very ghoulish demons making their way along for the ride are pleased as well to be in Falero's fine and lusty painting. Now, I would love to tell you that Falero's painting of witches has some sort of deep, resonating message to send to the people or the church or the government about how they shouldn't believe in witches or how they shouldn't bother with them in any way. But the truth is that Falero simply loved witches. He was mad for us. I mean them. Falero enjoyed many years of popularity in galleries and shows all across Paris and London in the 1870s and 1880s, but his work later fell out of favor as more discretionary work came into vogue. He then became an outsider artist, famous for painting lascivious nudes for ad companies in private. Pardon the pun. He rather fell further from grace with the public for some personal indiscretions that I won't go into here. but I do kindly ask you to view Falero's witches going to their Sabbath for its unapologetic beauty. This reminds me, the highly unusual, inexplicably talented Renaissance painter Hieronymus Bosch, who has a known body of only 20 surviving works, was believed to have painted any and all various forms of demons in his vast and wild, often surrealistic and fantastical scenes, but no witches of any kind. Many of his finest works are anchored in religious themes featuring mild saints and obviously advise following or pitying a tortured Jesus and warn you of steering clear of hellish pits filled with biting demons. However, we might be in possession of a singular Bosch painting containing a singular witch. It's rumored to be in the very highest rooms of the library. And neither Mr. Darling nor I are in a tremendous hurry to go up there. But if we find it, we'll be sure and let you know. Anyway, Bosch's most famous painting, The Garden of Earthly Delights, which was commissioned for a count's wedding. Not that count. The Garden of Earthly Delights was supposedly a vast allegory for the best and worst that marriage has to offer by way of biblical imagery. And if you can get this from viewing the painting, well, Mother Pin a Rose on you. It is filled with wild and otherworldly people, plants, animals, creatures, buildings, bubbles, giant fruit, and mythical halflings. There are body parts blended with the landscape. Thousands of characters in hundreds of outlandish scenes of scenarios. Magic, serenity, misery, and mystery happening everywhere all at once. Maybe it is about marriage. There are countless nude beings in Bosch's 500-year-old painting. And one of them in particular has some curious music tattooed across his bottom. And this music has long been referred to as the devil's music for, reasons. And some people have speculated that this music bears a profound similarity to the music of the Midnight Library that you hear as you enter and exit the library. And for those of us who make the Midnight Library our home, well, we wish to reassure you that any correlation between the two is purely coincidental for, reasons, probably. Oh dear. Did I say I would take a few of your questions? I did? Wait, do you remember that I said this? You do. Curses. We really should have put some treats out on the hospitality tray. Sigh. Alrighty then. I guess I'll take your questions. Oh, I see. You've written them down. How very clever. Pass them, Jimmy. Irma, baby. Good girl. Good girl. Okay. Let's see. The first question, from lovely Miss Fran.
Fran. Oh, Miss Fran has asked, she wrote, that my Victorian gown looks both authentic and brand new, which is it? Miss Fran, I'm taking questions on the artwork you saw as you entered the library. Not personal questions. Would you care to try again? You just tell. What? In the painting of the burning church, who was the pretty lady seated on the back of the funny gray goat? Now that is a good question. That was my grandmother Almira, and that was no goat, my dear. That was the artist, Lawrence Alma Tadema. And that was all his idea, by the way. Thank you very much, Ms. Fran. The next question is from Ms. Gannon, and she asks, the woman in the bearskin bikini looks exactly like Bawdy Maud, the woman on the label of the house brew down at the Broom and Fang. Is it the same woman? Yes. Yes, it is. let's see. I'll take one more question. Whoops, we won't be answering that one. Next. Lastly, this from Christina. Oh dear, is it true that Mr. Darling had a torrid love affair with a young nun here in the village? Oh my stars, when will this silly rumor ever be put to bed? Poor phrasing on my part. This is just the silliest, most ridiculous, unfathomable, inconceivable rumor that has ever been spread. Why would a finely bred, dignified, world-educated, mature gentleman like Mr. John Darling ever have any interest whatsoever in a dull, two-dimensional slip of a nun like Sister Trixie? Don't giggle, please. None of us can help what our parents chose to name us. Anyway, what an insult to Mr. Darling. What an insult to the man. Anyway, what kind of a monster do you people think he is? That's a rhetorical question. My word, look at the time. Oh, and no, you will most certainly not be exiting back out of the library via the same route through which you entered to catch a second look at the Hall of Paintings. It was a one-off surprise for you on your way in only. So, if you will kindly follow our handsome Mr. Darling down the only lit hallway. The darkened ones are now monitored by our friendly goons for your safety. And I will bid you all a fine farewell and say good night, my dear guests. Good night.
Oh, tell me, Mr. Darling, what was it that you found to be so irresistible about Sister Trixie?
Wait, let me guess. Back hair.
Very funny, madam. No, it was her innocence, of course. But also a little back hair, yes.
Well, I was honored to be your love child's witch mother for the brief time. It was here. You know, before it flew away, after only 3 days.
Well, yes, but to this very day, no other being in Phantom Forest lands a more fearsome and weird bite than little Hectorella.
The Midnight Library would like to thank everyone at Astonishing Legends. Our excellent sound design is by Chris at Sounds Like an Earful. We are here because of our beautiful patrons who donate at patreon.com/midnightlibrary. That's where all the real fun happens. Find our weird presence on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. And our even weirder merch at redbubble.com/people/midnightlibrary.